You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome back to episode number 46 of the Mind Over Markets podcast with myself, Mark Borscht.
And George Papazov. I'm back. I'm really excited to film this or record this, Marky, with you in the studio. I feel like it's been a long time. Over a month, no? Since we recorded together.
Yeah. I'd say at least 2 weeks for sure, coming off the back of the vacation. Appreciate you covering that last one. If you guys haven't heard it yet, make sure to check that one out as well. But today's episode, it's an exciting one. First and foremost, because we're back in the studio together. And secondly, because we are going to be discussing analysis paralysis. More specifically, we're going to be talking about the most effective ways that you can overcome analysis paralysis. All right. And so you might be sitting there wondering, what is analysis paralysis? And why is Mark saying it that way? And I'm just trying to get it into your brains here. So analysis paralysis is one of the most, if not the most common problems that you're going to face as a trader. And it really doesn't matter where you are in your journey, whether you're a newer trader or whether you're an experienced trader. This is something that everybody deals with regardless at what stage they are in their journey, right? So we've dealt with this in the earlier stages of our journeys. I mean, I wrote these notes based on us, but I'm sure you can agree that you might have.
I still face it sometimes, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So hence, doesn't matter what stage you are of your journey, it's going to be around. And it's important that we discuss it today because we're going to provide you guys some solutions, some tips that you can implement in order to help you work around analysis paralysis. So how would you know if you've ever suffered from analysis paralysis? Well, let me give you a quick example. You find it difficult to jump into the markets, or maybe you're too afraid to make a decision to buy or sell, then guess what? You might have suffered from analysis paralysis. And so in this episode, we're going to do a little bit of a further definition, or we're going to further define analysis paralysis. We're also going to provide those actionable tips that you guys can implement. But first, let's hear a quick message from the sponsor of this podcast, Trade Pro Academy.
Thanks, Marky. All right, trade pros. One of the things we're going to discuss around analysis paralysis is how to overcome it, how to spot it and identify it. And I know personally, I just mentioned I experience it as well. And one of the most helpful things you can have is a community around you to help you identify some key opportunities, some things that might be moving. Like for me, I use the NASDAQ correlation quite a bit. And when you're feeling analysis paralysis, it's oftentimes the best thing to just eliminate a lot of information. But how do you know what information to eliminate? Well, you need to know what information to keep. And so joining Trade Pro Academy, you get to learn the indicators and really the approaches and strategies that professional traders use on a daily basis and how to use order flow to day trade like a pro. So by knowing that, you'll know what other things to remove that might be redundant work. So check us out at Trade Pro Academy and head on over to our website, tradeproacademy.com. And check out the Elite Package. We got a ton of value for you. And thank you for listening for today's episode.
Ton of value. It's ridiculous how much value there is.
I agree.
So thank you for that message, Mr. Sponsor. So now we get to go into the actual meat and potatoes of this episode. So I've mentioned analysis paralysis several times so far, but I haven't given you guys a definition just quite yet. And you guys know we love definitions, and this definition is brought to you by Investopedia. So how does Investopedia define analysis paralysis? Well, they define it as, open quote, a situation in which an individual or group is unable to move forward with a decision as a result of overanalyzing data or overthinking a problem. All right. So in layman's terms, if you're going to relate this back to trading, analysis paralysis basically occurs anytime your thinking about your performance gets in the way of your actual performance. Now, this can show up a number of ways. All right. And like we mentioned earlier, regardless of your experience level, nobody is safe from analysis paralysis. However, with the tips we're going to share with you guys throughout this episode, you're going to be you're going to be in a better position to overcome it. So how does analysis paralysis generally show up. Now, we've got examples for rookie traders, and we've got some examples for experienced traders. So in this part, now that we've kind of defined analysis paralysis, we want to help you guys kind of identify it based on what part of your journey you might be on. All right. And so I will speak on the first part, on the newer trader part, and we'll let Georgie cover the more experienced trader part. All right. So as it relates to rookie traders, all right, analysis paralysis generally tends to occur for rookie traders when they're trying to do everything under the sun. All right. They're trying to catch every single move. They're trying to catch every single move. They're trying to track every single indicator. And guess what gets in their way? All those things get in the way. When you try to do everything under the sun, the result typically ends up, you get a whole lot of nothing, right? So you get a whole lot of nothing. And I'm going to speak on my experience here, because this was definitely something I struggled with when I started. And I think it's relatable to that of a lot of new traders' journeys. So I know for myself in particular, when I started trading and I started, you know, the typical journey, you get on YouTube, you know, at this time, YouTube was already getting a little bit more populated with content, with trading content. So I was on YouTube and I was looking, you know, how to trade, trading systems, trading strategies, and I stumbled upon indicators. All right. I stumbled upon indicators, and lo and behold, each new indicator that I learned about, it just seemed like, man, this is the holy grail. And so after a couple of weeks of research, of checking things out, I had opened I started with stockcharts.com was the initial platform.
Wow. That's a yeah. long time ago.
stockcharts.com. And then Georgie fortunately introduced me to TradingView when we met, but I was using stockcharts.com. And on that platform, it's not as intuitive or user-friendly as TradingView, but on that platform, you can plot a number of indicators. So you can imagine what my chart must have looked like when I started. I had all types of moving averages, you know, 10-day or 10-period, 20-period, 50, 100, 200-period moving averages. I had RSIs on there. I had MACDs on there. And, you know, the way that I saw it was, man, if all of these indicators can show me the same signal, then I've probably got a really good trade.
Yeah.
You know, price action has to be over the moving averages. They've got to have crossed. RSI and MACD both have to be in like oversold conditions. And guess what? That hardly ever came to be the case. All right. Because I had so much stuff, so many indicators, you know, or PG, but I'll call it crap. I had so much crap on my screens that I just ran into analysis paralysis, because hardly ever did everything line up to give me the same signal. Oftentimes what would occur is maybe one of the indicators or two of them was showing me, you know, a potential long scenario, but the other ones were showing me a potential sell scenario, right? So what do you do in those kind of situations? There's just too much clutter. And with all the indicators on my charts, I was finding I wasn't consistent with executing because there was just too much to focus on. So going right back to the example we mentioned, new traders generally try to do everything under the sun, and as a result, they get nowhere, right? So for me, what did I do? Well, I started off by just decluttering my charts, all right? And we're going to get into the steps you guys can take. Teaser, that was one of them, but I will go with a little bit more detail. But that is essentially the first step that I took towards getting rid of the paralysis, the analysis paralysis, was just decluttering my charts and really identifying what I needed to focus on and focusing on that. All right. So that is one of the examples of how newer traders typically tend to run into analysis paralysis. It has to do with too much clutter on their charts. And I guess the second one would be not really having a plan or strategy, just trying to go at it off the cuff. So that's how the newer trader generally tends to exhibit analysis paralysis. We'll hand it over to Georgie here, and he's going to speak on how experienced traders can also run into analysis paralysis.
Wait, Marky, do we have a list coming?
It's not numbered, but I guess it's still a list.
Bullet points? You can say like bullet points, number one, yeah. If you're counting your bullets. Yeah, that's a great piece, Marky. I love that you mentioned indicators, because even for me early on, I thought that indicators were the most important. You know how long it took me to realize that the sole purpose for indicators is just to indicate? It's weird. It took me a very long time because if you think about the word indicators, they're not. It's not signal. Indicator just says your gas light's on. What are you going to do, slam the brakes and call CAA? No, you're going to go to the gas station, right? It's like you turn signal on, but if a car's in your like blind spot, you don't have to turn into it, right?
You know what? Now that you bring that up, I think that was one of the initial analogies, probably not verbatim, but I think it had to do with the analogy of a car, driving a car. It was like driving forward by looking at your rear view.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like indicators, to George's point, it wasn't really until I realized that indicators are just a derivative of price action, right? It's lagging information.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So it's like, how are you planning on trading real time what's, you know, going to happen if you're using old information, right? So that was one of the big realizations for me, and I'm glad you brought it up.
So I love that you mentioned that, because I know we're going to talk about how to avoid analysis paralysis, but I could see indicator. Yeah, it's kind of there in the third point, but like removing the indicator. Remember this, an indicator is a laggy piece of info, like Mark, you mentioned, so keep that in mind. I think more experienced traders don't have as much analysis paralysis because they don't use indicators as much.
Yeah.
It takes you a little bit to realize that to do more in this business, you got to see less, right? It's like you got to have less on your charts. The cleaner your chart looks, like I've seen some posts on TradingView now and Instagram before and Twitter back in the day. It's like, it's got like Gantt charts and like Fibonacci retracements. And I'm like, what's the price of the current like chart you're looking at? Yeah. I can't even see that. Yeah. And then people will be like, oh, well, if you look through here, let me remove some indicators. Okay, look, see, like, and then once you get rid of all that, it's almost like indicators cover your eyes. And how the heck are you supposed to see the price if you keep covering your eyes with like different fingers in your face, right?
It's like the horse blinders.
Yeah, the blinders. Yeah. Exactly. That's how I see them. So more importantly, more experienced traders will come to that realization and drop the indicators and focus more on price action, because anything you see on your indicator, no matter how much you paid for it or what a coding genius you are, is based on something that I could see first in price action, right? It's important to note that is price happens first. And so the more experienced traders focus more on price action, and instead of getting sucked into the market, they tend to focus more on their setups. All right, but one thing that could kind of lead to analysis paralysis is losing trades. So if I ever get pulled off, like today I had a losing day. I think it was down $180 or something after commission, pre-commission.
It's still down probably George.
$20. I think it was like $2.50. I don't know what it was, a tick. So $12.50 actually is what I was up. It was up $12.50, but with commission, it was down like $170 or something. I'll see the statement today. But what I'm saying is, you know, I started out with the winning trade, the losing trade, and then I kind of got sucked in. So how do I say this? It's almost the opposite of analysis paralysis. It's more like an under-analysis paralysis. And you start looking and say, oh, let me jump in here, let me jump in there, because you're so opportunity-driven, everything looks like an opportunity. But one way you start to think about analysis paralysis is on days you lose. If you have like 2 to 3 losing streaks, and then you end the day negative, and then you have 2 to 3 losing days, you know, then you start to overanalyze your performance. Well, what did I do wrong? Right? Is it me? Is it the strategy? Which is good. It's a good way to start. But, you know, that's how a lot of more advanced traders get pulled out of the loop of consistency. They start to overthink things. And if you look at a true professional, a true athlete, you know, if we're talking, it's coming up. We're going to talk about that in a second. But if you look at true athletes, you know when they're struggling because they're trying hard. You know, like if you play sports, you look at somebody who's coming back from an injury and it's like, dude, relax. You're just trying too hard. Like you're always a step too forward or like too far in or just a second off. Yeah. It's like, stop trying and just start doing. And I think
overzealous.
Overzealous. Yeah. That's a great way to, you know, like you're always trying to beat everything. Like you're trying to control the situation where you just got to sit back in, slip into your own kind of routine and do what was working before. Because, you know, there's a chance that if you're down 2 or 3 days, that's part of your strategy. And I think that's how we're going to avoid analysis paralysis. We'll talk about that later. But I think, you know, there's a type of losses that tend to pull even the most professional trader into a little bit of worry. And I think to overcome it, you just have to remind yourself, I've been here before. I've come out of this.
Yeah.
And once you go through those loops enough, Marky, I think analysis paralysis becomes less of like a lure. It's kind of like you're on the path of success and you hear something in the bushes like, psst, hey, come over here. And you just say like, no, I don't want to listen. Silence this bush.
I just visualized you sitting in a bush.
Yeah. It's like, stay, get over here.
Hey.
Yeah. Let me tell you about an indicator that I got. But anyway, That's don't ever go to a bush for an indicator. It ain't worth it.
Especially in Toronto.
Yeah, especially in Toronto. But that's how I envision it to be. And I think it's not that more experienced traders are less susceptible to these things. They're more used to working with them. You know, it's like they're more used to, it's like that fine little line where you get sucked in, and then after you get sucked in, it's impossible to get back in. But before you get sucked in, it's like, I know I'm playing with fire. And today I was there. I was like, am I really trading high probabilities, or am I trading to make up my loss?
Yeah.
And when I asked myself that question, I was like, okay, I'm trading to make up my loss. I did two more trades and I won one, lost one. And I'm like, now I'm definitely going to be trading to make up this loss. So I'm like, I'm out. I'm done. I just closed it, closed the platform and left. But anyways, that's how more experienced traders tend to get sucked into analysis paralysis.
Awesome. But
there is a fix to that.
Yes, there's a fix. And I just kind of wanted to note one thing before we move on to the next bit here, in that I'm glad how George explained that, because the whole idea was to show you that the context for analysis paralysis tend to be a little bit different between newer, not tend to, they are different for newer traders and more experienced traders. So like in summary, there is basically newer traders, they tend to have too much stuff on there, right? And the more experienced traders, like to Georgie's point, you know, it's not that they struggle from analysis paralysis, but losses, especially, you know, experienced traders, they know they've been there before.
Yeah, right?
So they know that they've been there before. The dangerous part is, or I guess the walking the balance or the fine line becomes for experienced traders when they start to think about losing the next trade. You know, if that thought starts to creep in, right, then that's when you become at risk of not taking the trades you should be. Because after a streak of losers, you know, even if you're experienced, that can still affect you mentally. Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Mark. It's almost like to succeed in this industry, you got to get beat up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the little kid that gets beat on, and one day comes in and pummels the whole like schoolyard because he's just had enough. Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
Most recently here, right? Like they were down. And I was like, well, Dallas is going to come back. And then they're like, you know what? We've been here before. We've underperformed. We know how it feels. This time isn't going to be the time that happens. Yeah. They just committed. And even without Stamkos, he played, what, like 4 minutes?
Yeah.
A couple shifts. Anyway, so what I'm saying is it's got to be one of those things that you've been through in order to know how to get through it. And it's not an academic knowledge where you say, I want to learn everything professional traders do. You earn that badge over time. You can't just learn something and avoid the pitfalls. You're going to go through them. And our advantage to you and TradePro Academy's advantage to you is we help you get you out of those pitfalls before you get in too deep. Yeah. So that's the problem.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought up the thing about Tampa Bay, you know, saying that they've been here before. We're not going to let that happen again. That's exactly what I'm referring to here, right? Because if the players on Tampa were like, oh man, we're here again. Remember what happened last time? We lost. Oh man, I really don't want to lose again.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you nobody in the locker room was thinking about losing again, right? Yeah. They were thinking about winning, right? So even though they had lost previously, that thought weren't anchoring to that. They were anchored to, we're going to win this.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? Like kudos to their management for not blowing out the team. Like they underperformed for so long without any results. And there was just this like big belief in the players, and they had to like put up or shut up, like, you know, one point. I think they rose to the challenge. That's how trading is too. By the way, I love Tampa. I love Stamkos. You know, he's a Toronto boy.
If you're listening.
I don't want to make this Don Cherry-ish, and I know it's a trading podcast, but it's a good old Toronto boy.
It's a good old Toronto boy. All right, guys. We're going to get back into into detail here, but we're still going to use the example of athletes. All right, because if you've been following us at all, you'll know that we love to relate trading back to high performance sports. All right, and so Georgie now is going to give an example. He's mentioned it a couple times in prior episodes, but I think this example is perfect for today's topic about how professional athletes, how they work, and, you know, professional athletes can also get stuck with analysis paralysis, but this little example that George has is going to be kind of a great segue into how we can look to avoid analysis paralysis.
You know that this example I'm about to share had a significant impact on my life as a whole, because I was really never privy to see this side of like professional sports at that level, right? Like, so I got a chance to watch a practice, a closed practice. So there's no media, nobody. It was just me, I think four other people from our work. It was like a work opportunity. Mm-hmm. because we're sponsor of the NHL, right? Back in the day, Scotiabank, not TradePro. And and they sent me to watch the practice. I remember watching the practice with a whole new lens. Like, the things I was seeing was insane. One of the guys that grabbed my attention, this is a long time ago, was Mikhail Grabowski. All right. And he was sitting on the hash marks, like right where the inside is. You're basically in the slot, actually, in between the two circles for non-hockey fans. That's a high probability scoring area. And he was basically getting like 20, 30 passes right to the tape, and he was putting them all exactly in like the top shelf each and every time. Like, repetition, like you couldn't, he didn't even look like he was trying. It was just effortless. It was like a flow to him. And I'm looking at that, I'm like, man, like, this is the stuff the fans don't see. To get it that one time in the game, you got to do it like 50 times or no one's watching. And so he's warming up. So I'm sitting in the game that same night, all right, in the platinum seats. And right there, same spot, literally like the skate was probably sitting on the exact same crease that he cut into the ice. To the tape, hits it, top cheese, scores a goal. Doesn't even like make anything out of it because it's not a surprise that he scored. He practices, deliberate, it was intention. And I think when I saw that, I was like, holy crap, that's a whole different thing that fans of sports don't realize is the back end. What it takes to give you that perfection in real time, all right, behind the scenes, it's astronomical. I think trading has that same, like when you're on the top of the iceberg, it's like, wow, nice cars, nice vacations, and you want the top of the iceberg, but you got to see what's underneath.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. That took a little bit longer than Mark. Yeah, he put there 20 seconds.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that analogy because... I hope you guys enjoyed that analogy because athletes are like traders, right? They're like traders in the sense that in the example that Georgie just gave us, you know, Grabowski wasn't worried about the outcome of the actual shot.
Right.
Right. He wasn't worried about the actual outcome of that individual shot. He wasn't worried about the result of that shot. He was only focused on executing his skills correctly. All right. Which he did in practice. And that's been ingrained into his, I guess, subconscious, and he knows if he's in that position, he's got a high probability to score. So he's not thinking about what should I do when I get the puck in this zone. It is
muscle cell memory,
yeah. Right? So
imagine players only took the shots that they would score goals on or else they get fired. All games would end in 0-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't take the shot if you give it so much importance. If you shoot, you must score. Otherwise you get fired. You lose your $4 million salary. I'd never take the shot. I'd pass it to the next guy.
Yeah.
Nobody would.
That kind of brings up something I remember seeing once. I think it was the coach of Golden State. Was it Steve Kerr?
Mm-hmm.
It was like a thing with Steph Curry. It was kind of like they had a mic'd moment where he was talking to Steph Curry. And I think Steph was having an off game. And he wasn't hitting many of the buckets from the three. And I remember Steve Kerr going to Steph and he's just like, Steph, one of the things that I really appreciate about you is even though your shots aren't falling tonight, they're not hitting, he's like, you're still taking them.
Yeah.
You're still taking them, right? And so that's kind of, it goes back to what we're saying here, right? Is professional athletes, they're not really focused on the individual shots, whether it's Grabowski taking slap shots or Steph Curry taking three-pointers. They know their process. Right?
Yep.
They know their process. It's so ingrained into them that they know as soon as they're getting the ball in a specific location on the court or in the rink, it's just muscle cell memory, right? And so that's what you got to focus on to help you avoid analysis paralysis. Because if you have a process and you focus on executing your process, it doesn't matter what the result's going to be, right? Because individual trade results don't really matter. It's the data set. Right, the overall data set that matters. The individual trade doesn't mean anything. So if you're focusing on the result of each individual trade, then yeah, you're going to be drawn towards analysis paralysis because now if you take a loss, you don't want to take another loss again, right? So you might not take the trade that's supposed to be a winner based on not supposed to be a winner, but you might not take the trade that could be a winner because you're anchored to that previous loss. Whereas what you should be doing is you should be taking that trade if it fits your criteria because the larger data set suggests you have an edge.
Fun fact, Steve Kerr was the only one crazy enough to fight Michael Jordan. They got in a fight, apparently. And Steve Kerr said it changes the trajectory of his career. He's like, I learned so much from Michael and ended up being friends. Another fun fact, one of my best friends, Brandon, I also fought before I knew him. I'm not comparing myself to Kerr and Jordan here, but you know, sometimes when you disagree with people so strongly, you find that you actually agree with them on a lot of other things. You know, you're two passionate people, that's for sure. Anywho, that's a big aside.
Yeah, so that was...
I think secretly I want to have a sports podcast, Mark.
This is where this is going here. Look at TPA Sports. So that's what we got on, you know, kind of relating the concept of analysis paralysis to high performance sports. And that's really what we wanted you to get out of those examples, is that if you mirror what professional athletes do, they do not focus on the result. They only focus on their process, and the result comes from executing their process.
Did you think trading was a high performance sport when you first started? Be honest. I have an answer.
I don't
you guys would be
so
surprised.
Huh? I don't think so. I knew that it was obviously there was a performance aspect to it, but I didn't realize how much of it was like the mental side of it.
You know what, man? I didn't either. I thought like just gonna go out there, get a few tweaks going, learn a few things. I thought that knowing about trading was all it took to be successful.
Mm.
You know, it's like once you discover, hey, this trading thing, it's like, holy crap, this is it. And then I realized, you know, how much more it was like other areas where I have performed in my life, and it was nothing like areas where I hadn't performed in my life. So it's like I stumbled upon this need for performance. I'm like, man, this is harder than like any sport I've ever played. Let's ask Vicky. Vicky, get over here for a second.
You might just get a special guest.
Vicky just came back from the gym, and you guys are lucky for a guest. Yeah. When you first started trading, Vicky, did you think it was a high performance sport, or how did you feel about it?
Put me on the spot now, but no, not really. I didn't really think that it had to be like necessarily a high performance sport. I thought it was like supposed to be like a stressful environment, and like, you know, like the stuff you see on movies and. Like whatever it is, like you see like investment bankers and stuff walking down the street, like downtown Toronto, and everyone's like half dead and they've been working for like 55 hours, like the past 3 days. And it's like, I thought, oh, okay, that's what it takes. Like I need to be like in that like mindset and level, but like in terms of relating it to athleticism and like athletes, I didn't necessarily think that was the case. And it's like more of the athlete than like the grinding for like 100 hours a week.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks, Vicky. I thought I'd just throw him on because, like, you guys need to hear from different people, not just us. And Vicky just walked in after a workout, looked energetic. I thought I'd bring him in for a game time decision here. But yeah, and Vicky played soccer at a fairly good pace and a good clip. So he knows the mind state of performance and what's required. Marky plays hockey. You know, I probably played the least kind of higher caliber because when I came to the country, I told my dad, I'm like, hey, man, I want to play hockey. And he saw the cost of the equipment. He goes, hockey or food?
Yeah, but, seriously.
Hey, you know what? So the point I'm trying to make is now that you know that, none of us thought it was a performance sport, and that's a big realization. So you got to start looking at yourself as a performer. That one thing, that one identity shift could be enough for you to turn things around. That's why we use athletics so much in this podcast. So thanks to Vicky for jumping on. And Marky, another aside.
Perfect. So now that you guys have the sports analogies in there too to further drive the point, we are going to cover one more topic before giving you some tips and tricks to help you avoid analysis paralysis. And so the next topic is, why do traders suffer from analysis paralysis? And we're not going to spend too much time on this, but it's a relatively simple point. All right. And it comes back to, I guess, human nature. All right. People just prefer to have more choices.
Yeah. Wow. You know? I've never thought of it like that.
Never thought of it like that, right? So
it's actually an opportunistic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for more choices because more choices means there's probably a higher chance of survival. If you really take it back to the old school days.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. And that's exactly what we're going to say. So as humans, we're wired to believe that the more options you have, the better the decision we can make, right? But oftentimes what happens is this leads to information overload and difficulty in actually making a decision. Right. Whereas the less options that we tend to have, the more likely we are to make a decision. Now, you can relate this back to something like a restaurant. All right. You might go to a restaurant that has, let's say, 20 items on the menu. You might be spending some time wondering, oh, man, should I get this? Should I get the chicken? Should I get the vegan meal? Should I get the steak? Compared to going to a restaurant that might have 3 or 4 options.
Yeah.
All right. You're going to likely make that decision and you're going to be a little bit more decisive with that decision.
They would probably use like that tinned tuna to make you a sandwich and you'd rate it higher just because it was the only option.
Yeah.
people want to be right. You know, like people will fight for their biases. I mean, look at trading. Like that's exactly one area that we love to fight our bias. But this is really cool because this is Marky. This reminds me of a TED Talk by Simon Sinek. Start with Why. Have you heard of it? It's a TED Talk. He was saying that.
Start with Why. I think I read it.
The book. Not,
the book. I remember
big
a
red
book.
Letters, start.
Yeah, yeah. Start with yeah, Why. Yeah. I think we have it in the office behind us. I'm pretty sure we have it in the office.
Thanks. That's a signed copy that Simon sent us, right?
No,
that's not. But Simon, in this presentation, says he has like three different circles, the whys in the middle, the how, and the what. And he's saying that we don't really make decisions about our why as much. And so when we have so much choice, there's like choice fatigue and you'll never be satisfied. He was using an example where he used to go in the store and there'd be jeans. Now there's like six. Have you ever bought Levi's jeans?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like.
Yeah, they have so many.
Yeah, 522, 541, straight boot cut. You know what I mean? Oh, this is the low seat. I'm like, I just want to sit.
Just the athletic cuts.
Yeah.
I think it was like the 504s or something.
And you know what happens? You buy a pair. They fit amazing. Like, I'm going to own these jeans forever. They rip. You go in there like, sorry, sir, 522 is discontinued. You start home.
It's 523 now.
Yeah. It's like, but I don't know if 520. It's not the same as 22. More choice isn't necessarily a good thing, but your animalistic brain believes it is. That's why when you look at more indicators, you think that more info will help. That's a really fast. I've never looked at it like that, Mark.
I'm glad I
learned
can,
something from this
I'm glad
podcast.
I can open up your eyes too. But that's effectively what we want to get across. And that's going to be a nice segue into how to avoid analysis paralysis simply by knowing that as humans, we prefer more choice, but more choice doesn't often mean that you're going to make better decisions. All right. And so now we can start to focus on some of the tips and tricks that you guys can use to help avoid and or overcome analysis paralysis. So really the first one, I guess we're doing it's sounding a bit listy here. So let's just
convert this to a list. I'm doing it right now.
So the first one here is really just to get rid of the idea that all of your trading decisions have to be perfect.
What?
Yeah, I know.
You can't have 100% win rate.
I know. For the engineers, for the accountants, for the lawyers in our audience, I know this hurts. And, you know, I'm not any of those three, but I can tell you that I tend to be a bit of a perfectionist and
I know that about you.
Even still, I still try to be a little bit too cute. I call it being too cute, perfect, however you want to call it. There's a lot of slang that we use, juice. And just get rid of the idea that all the trading decisions have to be perfect, right? We live in, or rather we're in an industry where you don't know what the outcome of your decisions is going to be. At best, you have a certain probability that it might work out in your direction, but you never completely know the outcome of your trades when you're going to be taking them, right? So this kind of goes back to following the process, right? Yeah. You don't have to make perfect decisions. You just have to follow the process, right? Whether the trade is a winner or a loser, you know, even if it's a loser, it doesn't mean it was wrong. But if you followed your process, it could be right. So that's the first tip to help you guys avoid analysis paralysis is just to get rid of that idea that you have to be perfect. Every trade's going to be a winner. It's not. You can be a mediocre trader. You don't have to win 80%+ of your trades. In fact, I think we had, was it Vicky? He was doing like 37, was it last month?
Yeah.
37% or something.
I did 28 like today.
There you go. I just heard Vicky laugh from the back. 28%, right? So even with that, right, with the right risk management, you can still be making money, right? So if you're focused on, man, I lost more trades than I won today, but your P&L at the end of the session is green, right? What's more important, making money or being right?
Yeah, exactly, right? It's like, I said right, but wrong, technically I say exactly wrong because wrong is okay. It's like we should embrace the failure because let me save you a lot of time. If you're looking to be perfect, this isn't the business for you. And if you find the business, be careful because you're probably not seeing all the information anyways. There's no business that looks for perfection. I'll just mention one thing here and I will bring it to performance athletics very quickly here. You notice how sometimes big athletes, like superstars, not just a regular athlete because they'll know, but like a superstar is like they say, Michael, did you know you broke the record today for like free throws or something? They'll be like, oh, did I? Have you seen that happen like in a press conference?
So many times. Yeah. I think what was it? Our Canadian boy, Anthony Davies, when they won the Champions League.
Yeah.
I think he made a record. I think he was like one of the youngest Canadian of all time to play in and win a Champions League. And I think the interviewer after asked him, they were like, oh, did you know you got this record? He's like, no, I was just out there enjoying myself.
Yeah, he's like, I know now, but it's still not that relevant to me. It didn't change my performance.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. So statistics are for the fans. And so what you got to understand is if you're doing great, and if you're focusing on perfection, you're never going to be perfect. You're only going to see how imperfect you really are. But if you're just embracing the flow, being a little bit more intuitive, and you just trust yourself on what we're going to say in number two, the step number two here, you know, it, you get closer to looking perfect than any other way, all right, when you try to do it intentionally. Perfection is an illusion, and you don't have to be perfect. I think if you're in the woods and you see a bear and you're going to hit him to kill him, you should do that perfect probably. But but anything other than that, where your life's not at stake, you don't have to be perfect to survive. I won three out of 10 trades, so 33% almost. It's actually 28 today. That sucked, all right? How do you know that? Number one, it's probably too many trades. If it's 28, that's a very weird number, right? It's not. Anywho, let's go to step two, because that one's going to help you a lot.
Yeah, so step two is, you know, we put in trading plan, but trading plan's not enough. You want to really simplify your trading plan, all right? KISS, I just say KIS, but you can do KISS, keep it simple, or keep it simple, stupid, however you prefer. But trading plan is important because obviously that is what your operandus mirandi, I think something like that. I just try to sound smart. That is how you should operate, right? And generally what tends to happen.
Modi, operandus modi.
There you go, operandus modi.
But I don't know that. Like, I just had to Google it.
So the more running parts that you have in your strategy, the more likely you are to second guess yourself when it comes time to execute, right? And this kind of goes back to our human wiring, right? If something's too simple, we think it has to be more complex in order to make money, right? But that's really not the case. In fact, if you have a trading plan, you know, at base, your trading strategy, how you get into trades, how you manage the trades, and how you exit the trades, you should be able to write that on a napkin, like on a piece of paper. That's how simple it should be. Obviously, you're going to have a lot of nuances and stuff like that as far as risk management and trade management. But as far as entry and exit strategies, it's really as simple as, you know, maybe three things. I know mine is wait for lower lows or lower highs.
Wait for
the retest to the structure, and then look for order flow to confirm it and take the trade.
Jeez, we do the same thing almost.
Yeah. I wonder who I learned from, right? And so
it's the market.
The market, exactly. It's really that simple. It's really that simple. So if you guys are finding that you're getting to a point where, you know, you've got a trading plan, but you're having issues or you're kind of hesitating with execution, it's likely a case that there's just too much. You're looking for too much at a certain time, right? And that kind of leads into the next point here.
Got it to it very quickly. What does sleeping, breathing, and using the washroom have in common?
Oh boy. Sleeping, breathing,
and eating.
Using the washroom.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Sleeping, breathing, and using the washroom. You're doing something.
Way to go, general. They're all things you don't have to think about. It's not like you're thinking about that. Like, oh, I'm going to use the washroom. Oh, my God. You just go and use it, or you just go and sleep. You go and eat. That's the things that are the most important in your life are the simplest. You know, give that a ponder. And next time you try to make things complex, simplicity works. And I love it. I love the kiss with one S. It's not a long kiss, a short one.
Yeah, it's a short kiss. It's a little tap on the cheek. And so, another thing, I guess the third one, now that we're making this a list, the third tip you guys can use to avoid analysis paralysis is along the same pain as the second one. You know, keep it simple. This one is declutter your charts. Declutter your charts and keep only what is necessary. You know, if there was, I mean, our charts are pretty clean. We have like one indicator, like one true indicator, the VWAP or VWAP for our American friends.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, we're just using session levels. We're using price action and volume and really an order flow. So we've seen through experience, you know, we've seen people using different variants of VWAPs, different variants of moving averages. You know, I got the daily VWAP, 2-day VWAP, you know, monthly view app, quarterly view app, annual view app. And it's just like,
I know who you're talking about.
Me either. But whether it's view apps, moving averages, RSIs, MACDs, whatever it is, you know, if you've got a whole bunch of indicators on your charts, that's just going to confuse you. Because what happens when the indicators start giving you conflicting signals, right? You're going to be stuck there no better off than you would be if you decluttered your charts and really only kept what's necessary. Because at the end of the day, 99% of indicators are lagging indicators to what? To price, right? To what price is doing. So all you really need, really, is price action and volume. Like those are the two main variants that you really require. Anything, any derivative of that is going to be in an indicator form. And that's just going to be lagging to what price action and volume are doing, right? So declutter your charts, keep only what's absolutely necessary. If you have to cut everything off, keep price action, you know, candlestick charts, range bar charts, whatever you use, and volume, and then go from there. Maybe add one more thing. You know, if you need a moving average, maybe keep one moving average on there, but you don't need all of the moving averages, because you can, there's always at some point you can find a reason to talk yourself out of a trade. All right. You might say, all right, I'm looking to go short. All right. I missed a short. Oh, here, let's say we broke the view app. I want to get short below the view app. Oh, I missed that short. Oh, it's okay. I'm going to start looking to buy now because the quarterly view app is like 5 points away.
Yeah. Right?
And you can, the more indicators you have, the more that can start to find its way into your trading, right? Because you're going to have conflicting information and you might be looking at a longer term moving average and then a shorter term moving average, and you might be getting confused. So I think I'm beating this over the head, but just declutter your charts, keep only what's necessary, and you can see, you'll be able to see how much easier it is to actually follow along and listen to what the market's doing, right? Because we're not looking, obviously, we're not looking to anticipate what the market's going to do. We have a general idea based on what price action is doing. But at the end of the day, you just see, accept, and trade. That's all it takes.
I love it, Marky. I think part of the problem is that people, like going back to sports, play in the minor league hoping to have like the pro league success. It's like if you're at home and you get home from work and you just have 4 hours this evening to figure out how the RSI works, you're going to find situations in which it works. It does work. You know, it just... And then you can say, all right, so next week I got 12 hours for this MACD. I'm going to tackle it. All right, perfect on how it all works. And then suddenly you throw them together and you think now that makes it a great system. But here's the thing, all right? You have about 2 seconds when the trade looks good, especially if you're day trading, like 2 to 5 seconds where the trade looks good and it's still pretty good opportunity, and the point where it leaves the train station and you're chasing it. The more information, like 3 seconds is short. Look at this. 1,000, 2,000. 3,000, that's it. How much info could you possibly look at, analyze, and break down actionable steps in that time frame? Very little, right? It's not like one of those decisions where the gas light goes on in your car, you're like, where should I get off to get gas? You know, maybe there's a place I get some food too. It's one of those things like deer break.
Yeah.
That's trading in 100%. A nutshell. So you gotta declutter so you could do that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly true. And so that is what you can kind of do from the trade planning and the really just clearing up your charts point of view. And these next ones are going to be a little bit more hacks, I guess, hacks that you can use. All right. So the first hack is using visualization. All right. Visualization is huge. And I'm pretty sure we talked about this in one of the episodes, I think, where we compared trading to high performance athletes. I mean, we kind of touched on that in the majority of the episodes, but we had one specific one where I mentioned, and I remember this one, Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
Michael Phelps and his visualization techniques. And it was really, he mentioned in an interview that before he even, you know, touches the water, he's already visualized himself going through, doing a perfect run and winning. Right. And so you should do the same. You know, use visualization. See yourself executing the right trade at the right time and using the criteria that is part of your plan, right? That gives you that edge. That's going to give you that winner, right? So, like I said, as it relates back to sports, you've got athletes. I'm sure Steph Curry, when he's taking a free throw, he's already visualized the free throw going in before he's even taken it. You know, you see that from even a number of different sports as well. You can even look at, like, I don't know, freestyle motocross, stuff like that, where they're doing tricks, right? I actually did see one. It was a Red Bull event where it's downhill biking, and these guys are out in the canyons doing huge drops and stuff.
They're nuts.
And I remember this one, it was a younger dude, I don't remember his exact name, but he had a coach there. And I remember it was a very similar situation to that Steph Curry, Steve Kerr situation, where the camera kind of panned on them and you heard the interaction between the two. And I remember the coach asking the guy that was about to do his run, he's like, "How you feeling? How you doing?" He's just like, "All right, I see myself going through the course. I've already visualized everything going through." And he's like, "All right, I'm good to go. I've seen this. I've already done this in my head thousands of times. Now it's just time to put it together." And he did it. I don't think he won, but he had one of the better performances. And it's thanks to visualization.
Bro, you do that, just surviving in my books is a win. Like, yeah, just surviving an attempt at that is a win. Like, you know what, those sports is crazy, Barky? How do you, like, what does the first time doing that look like? Because no matter how much you scale into it, there's got to be a first time for it. And there's no going back. Once you pull the trigger, you're going. Yeah,
definitely. There's always a guinea pig, right? There's always a guinea pig. But visualization is huge. And one of the ways that, you know, I can give you kind of a further tip for this is to have a Hall of Fame. All right? Have a Hall of Fame as far as trades, you know, really good trades that you've made, effort, trades that felt effortless. You know, the trades that you planned, you stocked, you waited patiently. And then when you executed, you didn't really go through any heat. You didn't have any drawdown. And it just kind of like shot right into your take profit. Even better, if you record yourself trading, you'll have that whole recording that you can go back to. And literally, you can program that in your mind's eye so that before you even start off the session, you can be visualizing that win, how that felt, you know, the emotions tied to it. You can't really get that from, you know, just a screenshot and what you wrote up. The best way to do it is to record yourself trading and then review that. Review that. You'll be able to go back to the emotions you're experiencing at the time, you know, how everything felt, and then use that going forward before the market opens or even before you execute on your trade. Right? Because if the last thing you think about before you place your order is that I'm going to get stopped out, 9 times out of 10, it works. What is it? 60% of the time, 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's going to work.
You're likely going to get stopped out. Right? So visualize, visualize, visualize. And in doing so, when it comes time to executing, it's just like that slap shot from Grabowski.
Yeah, yeah.
It's muscle cell memory. You don't have to think about it. You're in your wheelhouse and you're just executing.
Love it, man. Honestly, like, visualization is so important, and you got to get the muscle cell memory down. I visualize a lot. I don't have a trading example for. I do have a trading example. Like, I visualize what successful days are going to be like before I was successful, and then I visualize what more successful days are going to be like when I am successful. I'm always visualizing what I want it to be like, because if you're just happy with what you have, that's great. But then life gets like kind of boring. So visualization is very important, and you know, meditation is part of that. We're going to do an episode on meditation, then I'll do a trading meditation for you. But this one's big, honestly, Mark. I'm so happy you added it in there, and you crushed it too. There isn't really much I could add, except to tell you the car that I drive, I visualized. I remember this very clearly. The lady was like, "Let me show you around." And I told her, "I don't need it. I've driven this car 1,000 times before." Like, in my head, you know? Yeah. I knew what all the controls did, because YouTube is good that way.
That's true.
Yeah. If you look at my history, like driving S63 MG, I probably watched hundreds of those videos. And that car, the S-Class, came out in 1995. And I've kind of been looking at it since. It's like the S550, then they had the other ones, blah, blah. But anywho.
Yeah. You're an older soul.
I'm an older soul.
He was looking at S550s when he was, what, like 18?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, probably. Even younger. But yeah, around there, like teenagers. And I remember looking at that car and saying, "Damn, that's like the car. What do those people do that drive that car?" And it took me a lot of time in my life to realize anything. Just do it good.
Yeah, exactly. Do it good. And going forward, here is tip number 5 or hack number 5. And that's to focus on the present. All right. We mentioned this quite a lot throughout a good chunk of the episodes in this podcast, and that's to focus on the present. A lot of the time when we get stuck thinking about the past, all right, past trades, past wins, past losses, especially as it relates to losses, those tend to stick more in our minds simply because, I think, what is it? Fear is 3 times greater than greed.
Yep.
Right. So fear is 3 times greater than greed. Losses hurt 3 times as much as wins do. Right. So if you're focused on the losses, you're focused on the past. If you're focused on how much I can make with this trade, you know, you're getting a bit greedy. You're focused on the future. You just got to focus, strip that all out. Everything past and present happens right now. All right. It happens right now. So focus your energy on executing your next best trade correctly and not on whether this trade is going to be a winner or loser like the last one, and not on I'm going to make this much profit, this is what I'm going to do with it. It's, are my qualifiers present? Yes. Is this a valid setup? Yes. Bam. Execute.
I love it, Marky. You know, that's such good insight too. It's like what you focus on, what you resist persists. So it's almost like the things you don't want, if you focus on what you don't want, you're going to make it happen. You're going to put yourself in that same state.
The funny thing is that it sounds like such counterintuitive advice.
I know.
And, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but, you know, I've been doing pretty decent amount of personal development work. And I'd say 9 out of 10 books that I'd read on specific topics of, you know, development, laws of attraction, et cetera, how everything works, a majority of these are basically saying the same thing. It's like, if you want to have abundance, you've got to be focused on the abundance in your life. Even if you don't feel like you have abundance right now, you are abundant, right? So just hearing that, you might be like, man, well, how can I feel abundant? I have bills to pay. I have mortgage, you know, food to put on the table. Yeah, if you focus on that, if you focus on the scarcity, you know, then that's what you're going to attract. And as counterintuitive as it sounds, when you stop really focusing on the stuff that you're trying to resist and you start focusing on, you know, what you want. It's funny how the world works. You know, it's funny how the world works. I was doing my affirmations the other day. One of which is money flows to me easily, recommended from somebody. And the other one is I am infinitely abundant.
Beautiful.
And I found $100.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. It's funny, right? It's like you just got to know what you want, and then the opportunities come up without you having to worry about them. It's not that hard. You don't have to figure out what you want and how you're going to get it. You just got to focus on what you want.
Exactly.
Is that today on your walk?
No, that was, I think it was either yesterday. What day is it today? Tuesday?
Tuesday.
That was like Monday.
Monday, yeah. I hate to tell you this. I think it was mine. I think it was like I lost.
See, yeah, we did it.
I'm working on my abundance too, man. Just kidding. You cannot cheat, steal, or lie. You will not make money for the long haul like that.
Exactly.
So I like this one. I like the focus. You have to be extremely focused on the present. The past is gone. You'll never get a chance at it. The future may never come. I think what's important is what you want right now. And I'll give you guys a quick little psychology flip because I love these one sentence abilities to change people's lives is when they say, I have to pay the bills. If you substitute the word have to for get to, you know, your life will change forever. Let's try that. I have to pay my bills. I get to pay my bills. You don't have to pay your water bill. Just don't drink water. You get to drink water, so you get to pay this bill.
That's true.
So when you kind of flip it that way, you're gratuity focused, and it puts you in the present of appreciation. And if you don't appreciate the things you have, the universe will never give you more.
Perfect. So happy that you brought that up, right? Gratuity. Basically, you have to be grateful for the stuff that you have, because without being grateful for it, you're not going to get what you want.
Absolutely.
It's that simple, right? So like Georgie said, you know, one thing I came across in one of the book was one of the author wrote, he's grateful for water. I think I mentioned
for water. Wow. Yeah.
So he's like, every time I'm either pouring water into my bottle or I'm drinking it, I am being grateful to the water for, you know, humans, I think we're like 70%+ water, right? So what he said was, you know, every time I drink water, I say I'm thankful or I'm grateful for this water that gives me energy or that provides life, stuff like that. And you can't really, you know, that's more toward geared towards health focus, but the same concept you can translate or relate it to even wealth and abundance, and you know, trading is part of doing that. So you got to be grateful for the stuff that you have, man.
Yeah, I agree. Ladies, 100%.
You'll be able to attract more of it. Leading on.
This one's good.
Yeah.
This one's good.
So number six, just turn off the TV. All right. George did a great episode here. I think it was episode 45. And in it, he mentioned one of his experiences from being a professional trader at the bank. And I can relate to this because I was held a similar position. And he said, one of the lessons that he learned was a majority of retail traders, they trade based off the financial media.
Yep.
All right. Your CNBCs, your Bloombergs, your BNNs, MSNBCs, all those networks. All right. There's an agenda there. All right. And that agenda is to make you transact. And more often times than not, you're not going to get the best advice from your financial media. All right. So turn that stuff off and focus on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the tips that we gave you before this one. All right. You're going to be distracted if you're easily influenced by external circumstances, external factors. That can lead to analysis paralysis. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're trying to buy a stock. All right. Based on your analysis, based on your strategy, everything's saying it's a buy. Right? You got a buy signal. Your strategy is saying it's time to buy. My probability is likely that I'm going to make money with buying this stock. Turn on TV, CNBC, and then you got a talking head on the company saying that, we've got a short report on this company. We think it's, you know, it's a bad investment. It's a sell. We're upgrading it to sell, or I guess downgrading it to sell.
For
XYZ reasons, right? And then instead of taking the trade based on your strategy, you've now taken influence from an external factor, being your financial media. You might not take that trade. Guess what? You don't take that trade. You check back on the stock maybe at the end of the session. It's up a good couple of percent. Guess what? You have no profits in your pocket. You didn't follow your plan. You followed somebody else's plan. And you talked yourself out of a good trade. All right? Analysis paralysis. You tend to look for things that confirm or disqualify your ideas.
I'll just ask a question for this one. I love how you covered it. Is what's television? What's the second word of they just call it TV now, but it's television. What? Television. What did they used to call it back in the days? Programming. Television programming.
Actually?
Yeah. It's like if you look at television, it's like television program. Your program is about to begin. So, you know, who is doing the programming? Who is being programmed? And what are they being programmed to do? Just think about that a little bit. Mm. And your whole world will change. I haven't watched TV in over like 7 weeks, partially because I had a kid. and I prioritize sleep whenever I can over TV. But another reason is there isn't any TV programming I'd like to allow to be programmed into my head. I like Gaia.
Yeah.
Some positivity stuff. I watched that quite a bit.
Well, you know, further to the point, let me ask our audience this. When was the last time you saw an advertisement for Bentley or McLaren?
I love this.
Right? Or, you know, these are cars. Bentley, Aston. When was the last time you saw a commercial for Rolex? You know, outside of
the tennis ATP tournament.
Tennis, yeah.
And F1. But yeah, you're right.
And F1. When is the last time you've really seen an advertisement on TV for any of the luxury brands that most people get into trading to get?
That's a good point.
Never. Because the people that can afford those products are not watching TV, and neither should you. On to the
end
next.
On to number seven.
On to the next.
Market replay to automate your skills. Another effective way to curb your anxiety about your performance is that you could execute trades with your eyes closed. It's got to be simple, easy, intuitive, repetitive. All right. Knowing the pattern, like it's automated, like at the back of your mind. All right. So I like this market replay. I actually recommend a lot of people do it. They'll say, oh, I had a crappy day. Like, well, you could go today and replay the day and get the trades you're supposed to according to your plan. That way you at least remember it as not a crappy day. You got the trades you needed to. figure, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to make money. I know where the market is. And I'm willing to bet that if it's harder than you think to replay a day, even though you've seen it happen, it's going to be harder to get in.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I give that to a lot of people and I say, look, you have to get to the point where repetition, you're not sim trading or replaying so you could get a winning strategy. Your sim results don't matter. It'd be the equivalent of Mikhail Grabowski taking 20 shots in practice and saying at the end of it, all right, I'll see you guys at the next practice. Good luck at the game.
Yeah.
How long is he going to have a contract? You're practicing to perform. You're not practicing for performance there. You're practicing so you can do it on game night. Game night is what counts. And so, I mean, listen to the episode, why sim results don't matter. But I really like this market replay for your skills. If you could do a trade 1,000 times when you go live, you're going to be thinking less. Trading is not a thinking sport. It's a viewing sport. You got to see and do, not just think. Once you start thinking, you've taken the edge out of your system.
Yeah, 100%. I can tell you, in fact, audience, that I'm going to be doing the market replay today because I took one trade. It was a profitable trade, but I could have done better. Could have managed it a bit better. So
I should be doing it today too, to be truthful with you.
So to be quite honest with you, it doesn't matter where you are in your journey. You know, the market replay feature is a great, really a great tool because, like Georgia said, you're not going to make more money on it now that you're in replay, but you're building those skills. You're building that slap shot skill. You're building that muscle cell memory that, you know, Steph Curry has to take free throws.
Yeah. Right?
That's what it's about at the end of the day. You don't, the worst thing you can do when it gets to your level is to start thinking, right? It should just be reacting. You're reacting and you're executing.
Especially self-sabotaging thoughts. You know, the time to think, is this going to work for me? You know, can I really do this? Am I really capable of being successful in any stretch? The worst time to think about that is when you're in the slot with the pass coming your way in the NHL. You know, like, think about that crap before you even go to practice. Because once you show up, you're showing up with the intent to give it your all. Doesn't matter what the score is. It's just to give it your all. And so don't have these midlife crises at the time of that's necessary for a decision. I think that's important.
Yeah, exactly. And the last one, and this one is pretty self-explanatory. You know, number eight here. Don't risk money you're afraid to lose.
That's simple. I won't even add anything. Well, I will. One thing. One guy messaged me on Instagram. He said, hey, man, I started with $30,000. And I only have 2,000. How could I make it back to 30,000? What do you think he was asking me? How do I recover the money that I wasn't supposed to lose? I told him, you know, keep the 2,000. You know, is 2,000 good enough? He's like, yeah, I guess it'd be good for a month. I don't know what he risked. I didn't really want to know. But, you know, he risked something to the point that, like, how do I get it back to 30,000? And if you jeopardize your family's risk, like, what are you trading for? To have freedom and to enjoy what you do. How freeing is it to lose money that you're relying on for your survival?
Yeah, exactly. And so have, you know, again, we've mentioned this several times. The capital in your trading account should be money that if you lose it all right, it's not going to affect your lifestyle. And we usually say, you know, speculative money shouldn't be anything more than 10% of overall net worth. That being the case, we are not registered financial planners. So make sure to speak with your financial planner. And that's what we got.
Mine ended at 10%, but I started at 100. Yeah. Anywho, that's a good episode, Marky. Glad to be back in the studio with you.
Yeah.
Loved it.
It was a good time. We appreciate you guys so much for taking the time to listen, especially if you've made it this far through the episode. You guys are the real MVPs and you guys are the ones that we do this for on a weekly basis. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen. As always, guys, if you guys enjoy what you hear, if you guys think that you got value or that somebody else you know can get value out of this episode, use your social media. Share this episode with them, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is. We'd really, really appreciate that. And also, you guys can jump on iTunes, trying to build up some more ratings and reviews. Get this in front of more traders like yourselves. You guys can, please do leave a rating and review. We'd really, really appreciate that. And finally, if you guys have any feedback, you guys have any questions you might want us to answer, maybe we can create a topic out of that. We'd really love to hear your feedback. Send us an email at podcast@tradeproacademy.com. That's what we got for you guys today. Until next time, everyone, good luck and good trading. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.